VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 509, recorded on July 24th, 2018.
Welcome to the 509th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 342nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, so I don't think we'll have anything as exciting as someone announcing they got married, but I was walking around East Hollywood naked.
What?
You know, yeah, completely naked. You know, it was hot. So I went to the supermarket, right, and they had a little trouble with me being completely naked, but you know what? I actually convinced them to let me shop naked because I said, look, if I'm completely naked, then you know for a fact that I'm not shoplifting anything. So they said,
I find
yeah,
that hard to believe.
Was this a gig or was this just...
You can check my Instagram. There's proof. My Instagram is Jonah Falcon 1970. Anyway.
I mean, when it's that hot, especially over there in Cali.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, no one said anything about it. They were all, you know, no one objected.
Well.
So there was that. And you can check out the Instagram. Anyways, what have you been marrying? I mean, playing.
So, we speaking of marriage, we finished Vampire. We did it together as a team. it was good. Vampire is pretty good. I wish the choices weren't so dire for those major ones that I could have like been a little bit more surprised. The story is good in the game, as should be expected from a not entertainment game.
I mean, you know, they're a mixed bag with stuff like, aren't they the guys behind Life is Strange?
Yes.
I know some people who don't actually like the story.
Vampire's story is pretty good. It wraps up pretty nicely. It's just there's five major choices you make in the game, and they are make or breaker choices.
Did they announce themselves? Like, oh, by the way, this is a big choice.
Oh yeah, when you get to the choices, you realize the weight of the situation and just what kind of impact it's going to have. It makes it very clear that it's going to be big.
So,
however,
I mean, you have
also,
to choose between the Snickers bar and the Twix, right?
Right. Except for it misleads you. So like the way I perceive it is that I was going for a good ending, you know, and the way the game plays out, the information I was given led me to believe that picking the Twix bar would be a good choice.
Here's the thing. Well, actually, that reminds me of L.A. Noire, you know, or Mass Effect. When you're given this choice, say, okay, I'll pick this choice, and they do something like, what? That's not what I meant.
Well, more along the lines of I picked the Twix because I've been led to believe that Twix is the superior bar if I want to go to the good ending. And then it's like, you picked wrong. There's rat poison in that Twix, you fool. And it really fucks you over if you make the wrong choice on some of these things. And I wish I could say that I'm embellishing, but that's the truth. Districts, like, fall into oblivion if you make bad choices at some of these points.
Scott?
Yes? I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt TJ.
Well, he's done. He's finished talking. He can talk.
Okay. Well, in fact, Jonah, one of our co-hosts, did actually get married this past weekend. Daniel Quick, he got married to his fiance and love interest for the past 2 years, and he actually had a wedding in Kingston, and a lot of the Turncast
2 years? Podcast
people.
That's a world with romance. I mean, TJ had to wait 10 years.
Not everybody waits as long as I do.
Dan didn't feel like waiting, so.
And it's like they just met on the first date and decided to get married. Just 2 years?
Not everyone goes out of their way to figure out every last thing about the person they're going to spend the rest of their life with, Jonah.
That's true. but knowing Dan, I think he did do that. He's very thorough like that.
Wait, mm-hmm. DJ, it takes you 10 years to figure out which way they like to put the toilet roll on?
we learn some new things every now and then that are fun. Nothing drastic at this point, but still it's fun.
Well, was he convinced you weren't a werewolf or a vampire or some creature, you know, like that what's it called, would take 10 years to figure out?
There's a funny story behind that, but it's a long one.
Well, we don't have time for it. So,
right.
What have you been playing, Scott? Aside from Legend of the...
Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. I'm aiming to finish it up pretty soon. I think I've beaten most of the shrines. That's pretty much my goal, is just to get the shrines done. I've done a lot of side quests and collected a lot of Koroks, but apparently there's 900 of those, and it's just not worth getting all of them.
You're almost done with it? I played that game for days upon end for review, and I still haven't finished it.
Well, there's there's doing side quests. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of side stuff, and the main quest can be finished pretty quickly if you focus only on that and don't do all the shrines. It makes it harder, I think, to do that, but you can certainly do it. I heard people beating it in like 4 hours, you know, so that's pretty quick. But I want to sink into the game, and I think I have. And like I said, I want to finish it and move on to Octopath Traveler.
Oh, that one's good. That one looks so good.
You know.
Yeah, I want the story.
Every time you talk about speedruns, I think of TJ, since that's his job tracking it at Twin Galaxy.
Yeah, one of many. I think the fastest I've seen on Zelda so far was somewhere around the later 3 hours. It's insane. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know who. And this was like within 3 months of the game releasing, which, like, where's the fun in that? Just picking it apart so quick and then putting it all together and then just being like, all right, 3 hours done.
I don't know. Some people have a different definition of what's fun for them. I like taking my time in a game, and some people just want to blaze through it as fast as they can.
Absolutely, and it's impressive. I will say that. These people who, like, just like, I mean, it's not just one person either. It's a community of people who come together, nitpick every little mechanic and, like, wall and, like, little niche and everything in the game, and just, like, find the things that can break.
I've seen some crazy things that I don't think was game developer's intention, or at least I'm not sure, where somebody had chopped down a tree, stasised it, hacked it a few times to speed it up, jumped on it, and then launched themselves, I think, at Hyrule Castle. It was just like, oh my god, it was insane.
And no doubt there's like a wall somewhere that you can break past and get into Hyrule Castle early and finish the game.
Oh, you could go right into Hyrule. There's nothing stopping you from walking to the castle other than the enemies that are really tough and hard. But if you are really good at the mechanics, the battle mechanics, you should be fine, because they give you most of the tools that you need right off the bat. You know, stasis, the magnesis, ice flow, and the bombs, and then the perfect dodge and perfect block.
You know,
perfect defense.
Yahtzee speculates that they did that so that it would make speedrunners jizz their pants just to try, you know, to find a way to end the game really quickly just by having the end of the game is right there. If you can get there.
Yeah.
It's funny. The Lynels, which are basically lion centaur men, are much harder than any other boss, any other Ganon boss in that entire game. They're just...
They're brutal.
They're horrible.
Yeah. I've tried fighting them, and they are just brutal. You end up wasting so many weapons on them, and just it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. They have so many attacks that can just, like, take 6 hearts off of you in one shot.
Yes.
So I played Captain Spirit, or part of it. I haven't finished it. And what'd you think of it? It's trying to be so manipulative. It has the indie soundtrack, you know, the guitar, piano soundtrack, you know. And it has a kid who has no mother, whose father is a drunk and occasionally hits him, you know, and apologizes for it. He's a good person, but he's an alcoholic, abusive person also, and all that stuff. And that just turned me into a heartless, cold bastard who didn't care about this kid anymore. When you try that hard to tweak and treat me like some millennial who's going to fall for something like by Wes Anderson, it just makes my blood cold.
I don't understand the problem. Is it because the scenario doesn't seem realistic to you?
No, it's just trying so hard to manipulate me. It's like you're doing the opposite. You're doing the opposite. Telling me to feel something is going to make me not want to feel it, and I just become cold and heartless, and then makes me not give a crap what happens to this blonde brat. Because it's also predictable. And that's another strike against it. So yeah, you know, you can try all you want, but you know, things that move me aren't going to be stuff that says, feel bad here. Oh look, isn't it poignant? He's sitting in his treehouse and looking at the world, and it doesn't stop until you tell it to stop. So you can let it run for 2 hours, and it's just going to pan over the same stuff. It doesn't work on me. I'm not manipulatable like that, you know. There's stuff that manipulates me that doesn't try to. I mean, like the ending of Grim Fandango. It didn't try to be maudlin, and it wasn't maudlin. But it was still sad because you'd spent, you know, 10 to 20, 30 hours being with these characters, and now you have to say goodbye. You know, I'd rather have sadness of having to let a character, you know, the ending of Dragon Age Origins, you know, I was a mess because I'd spent, on my first playthrough, it took me 80 plus hours to get through the plot line, you know, and I was getting closure for all that. That's affecting, you know. Telling me some virtual kid is getting beat the shit out of his dad doesn't help me. I mean, that dragon cancer is going to be more affecting, A, because it's real, you know. And B, it isn't trying to say, feel bad here. No, you're going to feel bad because you know what's going on through the context. You know, all the happiness that you're feeling, you know, all the happy moments in that Dragon Cancer, you know, are sad because guess what? We know the ending already.
Right. I would agree with you. There's a slow burn between, like, jumping straight into sadness, like, If they go straight from A to kid beating,
well, it isn't that. It's just sort of like, you know, his dad is boozing up, and you know what's it called? He's looking at his son's bruises on his arm, which he apologizes for. It's like, yeah, I get it.
Well, I was gonna say, even with the original Life is Strange, you had time to get to know like Max and was it Zoe? Or Chloe?
I don't know.
You got to know the characters, and you got to, like, connect with them before it got into some deep stuff. I mean, sure, there was, like, the mechanic where time can be altered and messed up things happen. But there is a sense of, like, you connect with these characters before you go into those emotional states.
I mean, the first episode doesn't even deal with a teacher being, you know, what he is. The first episode just talks about him critiquing her photographs, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for the slow burn. If you just jump straight into it, like, just, like, hammer it out, like, sad stuff happens throughout this whole thing.
Captain Spirit actually bridges into Life is Strange 2. So,
and they rush it too much by trying to be this quick prologue, and you don't really get time to, like you said, care about the characters.
Yeah, that's the thing. You gotta have time to connect with a character before that stuff matters. Otherwise, why do I care if this
actually, you know,
about
here's
this
the thing. You know,
outside
Walking
of the fact
Dead,
that it's wrong?
Days? Before Walking Dead 400 Days did the same thing, but I still cared more about those characters. And they were leading into season 2, you know. Now, I ended up not liking the characters, but, you know, I started feeling for the characters, even though I didn't know anything about them, and it wasn't even focusing on one person. It was focusing on five different stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's probably the indie film soundtrack and the lettering that just made me want to slap it across the face. I don't want to play a game made by Wes Anderson. Or
even Wes Anderson is a little bit more subtle, I think.
Or maybe whoever did Syndicate New York, I forgot what the name of who directed that movie. You know, I mean, Homestar Runner made fun of it when Strong Bad said a movie of this sort is going to be called Place City, comma State, in the same exact font, by the way. But anyways, I felt myself not really caring about this blonde brat. It was just too much. Basically, the game has you doing a bunch of mini games and trying to figure out puzzles. It's just fine. And, you know, the art style is pretty good. You know, the art style is slightly more cartoony than Life is Strange. And I wonder if it's because it's trying to be from a kid's point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. It's from his... That's the thing. I was really sort of hoping... when I saw that game, it made me think of, like, Calvin and Hobbes, Spaceman Spiff, and I was kind of hoping that would be, like...
Yeah. It's directly referencing that with him imagining himself as a superhero.
Yeah. Only with bad parents.
Imagine yourself as a superhero when you were a kid?
Of course I did. I did the towel around my neck thing, of course, but... I don't give a shit if it's someone other kid. I've already had that experience. They didn't make me care about this kid except for the fact, oh, his father's a drunk who beats the shit out of him, but is trying to be a nice guy anyway. Feel for him. Just slow it down and let me, you know, not indicate that there's anything wrong with their situation except for the fact their mom is gone. If you just have it that his mom is gone... And no information, no other information. Don't tell me that his father is a drunk, because they make it so obvious. He might as well live in a brewery with the amount of bottles that he has. He actually takes the bottles that his father drinks and plays a game of knocking him down with a snowball. That's how boozed up his father is. If you only had him drink once and didn't say he's an alcoholic, you know, at least maybe I'd be shocked a little bit more. You know, make me think this is a nice, normal, happy family instead of telling me right away, oh, it's a broken family, his father's a booze head, and he likes to hit his kid. Well, I didn't say he likes it, but he does out of accident, you know. What? Don't give me all the information at once, you know.
Yeah.
So that, you know, okay, you're living in this kid, he likes to fantasize about being a superhero. You don't have to tell me that his father is a booze hound. Let it be a slow burn. Just wait, wait, wait. Give me a typical day of his life and not
especially
have it be, oh yeah, his life sucks, isn't it? No, make me think his life is great.
Especially if you have if you know there's going to be multiple episodes anyways.
You know, there's two characters, him and his father, and you blew your load telling us everything about them in the first few minutes. Why not let us think this is a happy family? You know, as if we're a stranger. Because if I'm going into a house and I see the father's boozed up and the kid has bruises on his arms, I'm going to be calling Child Protection Services right away. You know? Make me think, oh, it's, you know, the mom's gone, but they're happy. He has his games. He has his toys. You know, he likes to pretend to be a superhero. You know, you get to decide what kind of superhero he is, whether he wears a mask or not, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know? Make me think that they're a happy couple.
And you could have had that foreshadowing to lead into Life is Strange 2 as well.
I mean, you could also have, you know, maybe his father's drinking one beer, but you don't have to think, oh, well, that's all he does.
Well, then you start to see, like, maybe by the end of the episode, there's just a pile of beer there. Not at the beginning of the episode when you've just gotten in there.
And you step in the door. Let us see his bruised arm at the end of the episode. Like, oh, wait, this is not a good situation.
That's a shame. I had high hopes for that one. I hope the actual season of Life is Strange 2 is a little bit better.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm not going to say that the dialogue is fine. You know, the dialogue, the graphics are great. It's a very homey atmosphere. But trying to be so manipulative right off the bat, no. It just makes me not... I have to be invested in these characters. You did the anti-investment. You told me, oh, well, guess what's going to happen. Okay. So, yeah, it did not pluck at my heartstrings. I just got the Sega Genesis Classics disc from Gamefly. So I got some achievements for doing columns. I have to figure out some of columns 3, because here's the part about it that I don't like. They don't have any of the instruction manuals on some of these games. Like, for columns 3, you know, it's basically, you know, combat Tetris. And you have to tell me how I attack back. You know, at least when I played something like Super Puzzle Fighter, oh, here's how you attack back and where the meter is and all that stuff. Here, oh, by the way, the computer's attacking. How do I attack back? Find that, figure it out for yourself. Oh, you didn't own a Genesis? Well, sucks to be you.
I guess you can Google the manual.
Mm-hmm. I tried that. I looked for columns 3. I couldn't find anything, which sucks. So, yeah. I mean, there is a FAQ.
There's a website out there, you know,
but
somewhere.
It didn't tell me what keys to press on the Xbox One version.
Yeah, they should have done some instructions for this port. That's definitely
any of the Sonic games, because I played them to death when I was young. I'll eventually try them out again just to play Sonic again. It's Sonic the Hedgehog. They did include the Phantasy Star RPGs, and those I have not played, so I
like those. Those are good.
But like I said, you better have the I better see how to play on the Xbox One, or else that disc's going back. This is the sort of game that you don't rent. You decide, do I want to buy it or not? And I have $5 off if I want to buy it. So we'll see.
I'd probably just get those on Steam.
No, because I want the achievements too.
You can get achievements on Steam.
Not Xbox achievements. The achievements on Steam, I don't really give a rat's ass about. I really don't.
They're
not cumulative. They're just, No, at least there's a number attached to my Steam achievements. From all the way back in 2005? 2003? I don't know when the Xbox 360 came out, and but they started the achievements right away. Anyways, so I'm doing that. And there are no games that I'm really looking forward to in the next month or so. So, before we go on to game news, what game do you have your eye on for this coming fall?
Dragon's Quest XI.
Okay, I already played that at E3, or at least a good chunk of it. How about you, TJ?
I forgot what was coming out in...
I still haven't played Far Cry 5. I really, you know, that's the game I'm hoping pops up on the Gamefly, because I don't know if I want to buy it or not.
So, let's see here. Is there one that you're anticipating?
I thought there might have been, but I don't know. I know I'm not anticipating Fallout 76. That can go eat a dick. I'm not looking forward to Metro Exodus. I played it. It's okay. You know? I mean, I played an early version, so it felt kind of janky. I don't know. So anyways, let's move on to game news.
Well, hold on. Spider-Man and Red Dead Redemption 2. Those are the two that I'm...
2 is coming out this year? I thought it was coming out next year.
Nope, it's October 26th.
Okay, then maybe it's that. That's what I'll spend my GameSpot money on. My GameStop credit. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. The C64 Mini is coming to North America on October 9th, and this comes to us from a press release sent to me. Retro Games Limited and Solutions 2 Go have announced that the C64 Mini is coming to North American retail stores on October 9th, 2018. The C64 Mini, a 50% replica of the world's best-selling home computer. I have to put an asterisk on that home computer thing, because to me it was more like a console with a keyboard. You know? Comes preloaded with 64.
You could do programs, though.
What?
You could do programs, though. My mom.
I know, but I'm just saying it was built like a console, though. Let me continue. Comes preloaded with 64 classic games and the C64 joystick. Originally designed for fans of the original machine in mind, the C64 Mini is also attractive to kids and families thanks to a simple plug-and-play action. Aspiring gamers of yesteryear can revisit the past and program their own games. Just add a keyboard, and the C64 Mini becomes a fully functional home computer complete with C64 Basic, which, by the way, I use like nothing else. I made a lot of games on it. I learned how to program actual games on with BASIC. The C64 Mini includes California Games, Winter Games, Impossible Mission 2, Boulder Dash, Jumpman, Pit Stop 2, Speedball 2, Brutal Deluxe, Street Sports Baseball, Summer Games 2, the Temple of Apshai Trilogy, Iridium, and more games already installed. The unit also comes equipped with two USB ports, a high-definition output at 720p and 60Hz via HDMI, a 4x3 ratio, US-Europe display mode options, and a CRT filter for the classic look, a USB keyboard, and a save anytime function, and it supports software updates via USB flash drive so the players can have continued access to improved and enhanced programming. Now, let me tell you something about the C64. For those who don't know, when it came out in the 80s, here's the thing you have to understand. It had the most games ever on any system. You want to know how many games? 12,000 games. That's how
That's
easy it was to program for. Now, not every game, a flash, was a brilliant bolt of lightning, of course. But the C64 just dominated. It was everything. I remember someone who owned the tape cassette save system. I always found that kind of sad. You know, when you saved on audio cassettes.
I remember those. The C64, I guess, is a kind of a hybrid computer console because you had the keyboard and
you had a cartridge slot.
Yeah, there were cartridges, and you could program those cartridges. And my mom made a program for the alphabet where you would press a letter and an image or an animation would go on. She did like Z for zipper and I think A for apple. I can't remember the rest, but like Z for zipper was like my sister's favorite button to hit. So, and they had a picture of that. So I remember that in my mind. So yeah, like I said, my mom made a custom game to teach us the alphabet with Commodore 64. So that's a pretty awesome console or computer console.
A couple of RPGs with it. And using the thing that C64 had was a lot of characters that could be made into. And I also, I don't know if you remember this, but there's also the fast load cartridge, which you put in the cartridge slot, and all the programs ran faster. Because everybody knows, load asterisk 8, comma 8, because I had a disk drive, of course. Jumpman was amazing, and it made Donkey Kong look like nothing.
I remember Jumpman Jr., I used to play that all the time.
And that was played to death, too. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine was really pissed that there was a guide on how to get past the levels in Jumpman Jr. It's like, what are they doing? They're revealing all the secrets. I remember Temple of Apshai. I remember all... And that was... I noticed there's a lot of Epic's games there. There's a lot of Epic's games, and they're the one who did the California games and the Winter games. And one thing about California and Winter games is that you could have them; they were made to, play together, so that you could go from the California games to the Winter games and keep your. From the Winter games and the Summer games, you could keep your medal count going between the two. California games was interesting because it had surfing. It had, and one of my favorite things in the Winter games game was doing the freestyle skating. Because you had to time the triple Lutzes, and also you had to be artistic, so your score depended on what you did. One of my all-time favorite games was all the Ultima games I played were on the C64, but I loved Car Wars' game, Auto Duel. That I played for hours and hours. I really wish they would remake that game. I play it with an Apple II emulator, and it still holds up. Even though it has the most rudimentary graphics.
I remember playing a space game where you flew through space and had lasers to shoot, but I never had any targets to hit. I just aimlessly flew through space.
Games. Come on. You could be talking about Cosmic Avenger. You could talk about Gradius. You could be talking about a bunch of games.
Well, it wasn't Gradius. I don't think it was Cosmic Adventure. I think it was some space something. But, I mean, that was like 30 years ago. I don't remember. I don't have the cartridge anymore.
And it was so ahead of its time. It was a game that was so ahead of its time. Like, Dragon Riders of Pern. If you ever listened to the theme song, you're addicted. But here's the thing. not only it had one thing, which is an action thing in which you're in a dragon on multi-plane shooting down the threads, but it was also a Game of Thrones game with text adventure style in which you had to say, oh, do you want to go to the wedding with this person or share your clutch of eggs with this person? You know, and you had to wait, you know, in real time for them to respond to you because you were trying to get all these holds, all these holds to join your clan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I remember there was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game on the C64. There were all these games that were just, you know, they were Karateka and all that stuff. And it just
pretty sure there was a Star Wars game.
What?
I'm pretty sure there was a Star Wars game.
Oh, there was a metric fuck ton of those. And there were so many bootleg games, too. It's not even funny. Archon. God, you know, I could go ages and ages for all the games that I played on the C64, like Sid Meier's Pirates and the first SimCity and the and all of Sid Meier's games, actually, like Railroad Tycoon. You could go for hours just talking about the C64 games. I'm just wondering how it's going to deal with all those games. You know, they have the built-in games. And there is a C64 emulator, you know. The problem with that, this is like 10 years ago, it was kind of wonky. So if this does a pitch-perfect C64 things, how is it going to handle, you know, these ROMs, you know, that you didn't really buy the game, you're just using the ROMs? From your silence, it doesn't sound like you dealt with a C64 there much, TJ.
No. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, like, it sure is a good thing that Atari is coming back and Intellivision is coming back and Neo Geo is coming back. And
this is a C64, man.
And I'm just like,
I remember the VIC-20.
I guess there are two people in this room that the C64 Mini is for. I just also wonder
the C64 started chiptunes, for crying out loud. They had the synthesizer they had the special synthesizer that was above anything else, and it, you know, like the Ghostbusters game that was first on the C64. God, you know, you do a search for C64 games, you're gonna see thousands and thousands of games that you didn't even think were there. I mean, Maniac Mansion started on the friggin' C64. Elite started on the C64.
And I think it's okay. So if it was just the 64 games and it's like basically if it was an Atari flashback, I think that would be a bummer. But it is cool that you can actually like put a keyboard on this thing and program your own games if you want to.
Here's the thing about the keyboard. It looks like the regular C64, so it sounds like you just dock the console into the keyboard itself.
I'm just glad that it's more than just a flashback system, because here's the thing.
I'm going to tell you something. There was a magazine called Compute, and it had C64 programs you could type in, and like 3/4 of these programs were data lines, data number, and I'm going to tell you, a lot of people spent 2 days faithfully typing in these long BASIC programs just to have a free game.
I remember that.
Of it was through BASIC.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, that's neat. It's cool that they're actually going to allow you to like access the foundational work, the groundwork for the C64 system, and be able to program your own games. That's neat.
I'm just looking at the list of games in A. Just the letter A, though, for the Commodore 64. There's like 300 games here. Like, I forgot. I remember EA was at its best. The album cover games. Games like The Bard's Tale. Games like Adventure Construction Set and Pinball Construction Set and Racing Destruction Set and Mail Order Monsters. Look up Electronic Arts album cover games. When, you know, their games were actually looked like vinyl albums with the discs inside. this was when everybody loved Electronic Arts unreservedly. And Activision followed suit with their own version of that too. So yeah, I mean that Addams Family game. Yeah, so anyways, I haven't seen how much it costs, but, you know, I have to admit, you know, like I said, there are some games on the C64 that still hold up now. I mean, you could say, oh, I'm going to get the Atari 2600 emulator. Yeah, but a lot of them don't hold up, you know?
Yeah.
Not even some of the best games, like Pitfall, sort of kind of holds up, but you've seen it done better. Commodore 64, they all a lot of those games still hold up really, really well. I mean, part of it is that in like the Atari 2600 had 4K, while the C64 had 64K, which makes me wonder if they're going to allow it to buy go beyond that, you know, because there was the Commodore 128, which no one bought, but it still exists. It was for more for business.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Jumpman. I mean, that was a shit.
Anyway. I did like Jumpman. I'd like to play that game again.
And Temple of Ashai was a... I can't say it was an action RPG. It was a real-time RPG in which you had your guy walking through these halls. I don't know. It's just... Anyways. Like I said, the C64 Mini, I want to see how much it costs, see if it's worth something. You know, if it's, you know, because like I said, there's a lot of C64 games which just are still hold up and are amazing. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Datamined logo offers more evidence that Takeo Drum Master will switch. Takeo Drum Master 4 Switch is coming west. This is from US Gamer. There's an increasingly good chance the new Takeo Drum Master game for Nintendo Switch is getting a Western release soon, between new classification ratings from Australia and Europe and new data mined info. It might not be long before the game is announced. A G rating for Takeo No Tetsuten Drum and Fun showed up on Australia's media classification site in June. Takeo No Tetsuten is the Japanese name for Takeo Drum Master. More Drum Master classifications for Europe have popped up since, including classification for year's Drum Session game on PlayStation 4. Last week, a data miner found evidence of an English logo in Drum and Fun, though Japanese words Takeo no Tetsuten remain intact, same as they do on Australia's rating for the title. Takeo Drum Master is a series of very cute rhythm games that instruct you to bang on traditional Japanese Takeo drums, albeit in a digital form. Your neighbors would be so thankful if they only knew. Western territories often get their own playlist, which means Drum and Fun's iteration of a Cruel Angel's thesis may not make the cut. So are they going to sell a new peripheral for this? Like a little drum set, or you just bang your little Joy-Cons?
Go ahead.
I'm willing to bet it'll be a little A, little B, where it'll be a motion game, but with where they might do a peripheral. But who knows if that peripheral will release in the West.
Because, I mean, it's a release of drum thing. How many games are really going to want to use that?
Well, you know, Parappa the Rapper was a rhythm game that didn't require any drums.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but motion controls are always a little bit more sketchy when it comes to rhythm games.
I think that it probably might use a peripheral as an option. I mean, unlike Guitar Hero, in which you can play it with your gamepad, but you're not going to get much out of it.
I am finding the motion controls on the Switch to be pretty good. In Zelda, when you do the bow and arrow.
There isn't a controller for it.
Yeah, I got the Pro Controller.
No, I mean, there's a Taiko drum controller for the Switch in Japan.
Oh, okay.
So it is optional, and it comes with two little drumsticks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm pretty sure they'll give you that option if you want to get it, you can get it with the drum controller.
Okay.
I wonder if they would actually sell it without the come. If they would sell the entire thing as not an option, because I don't know if Americans would want to play something like that without a controller, without a specialized controller.
I don't think I'd want to buy the drums if I could buy it without and just use the Joy-Cons. That's probably what I would do.
Okay.
Like I said, I found the motion controls to be pretty good on Zelda. Like when I'm shooting stuff with a bow and arrow, I can use the controller to do a fine-tuned aiming, well, which is a lot better than just trying to use the joysticks.
Yeah, well, use the motion controls for this game, too.
Yeah.
With simple button controls. But they have a drum version as well.
That's true. Just use a button.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Next, Xbox will focus on xCloud game streaming from The Verge. Microsoft is currently developing its next-generation Xbox, with recent reports suggesting the console will launch in 2020. While the hardware will undoubtedly surpass the capabilities of the current Xbox One X console, Microsoft is also focusing on game streaming for the future of Xbox titles. Throughout.com reports that Microsoft is also working on a second Xbox console that will be limited to streaming games. The streaming-only console will reportedly include a low amount of local compute for handling tasks like controller input, image processing, and collision detection. These tasks are essential to reducing latency in game streaming, and Microsoft is said to be planning to slice up the processing between the game running locally and in the cloud in order to reduce input lag and other image processing delays. Microsoft is currently developing its next-generation Xbox console under the Scarlet codename, which is still the best name they've ever given an Xbox.
Yeah, I mean, it's just released the Xbox One as a Project Scorpio. Damn it.
The software giant recently revealed it's working on a game streaming service for Xbox that will work across any device. This is a key part of Microsoft's future plans with Xbox, and part of the company's vision for developing its Netflix for video game service, Xbox Game Pass. Sony developed similar custom PlayStation hardware for its own PlayStation Now service, allowing consumers to stream PS2, PS3, and PS4 titles to PCs or PlayStation 4 consoles. Although I will say that PlayStation Now is kind of sketchy because of the aforementioned input lag issues.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a part of it. I mean, Microsoft already has the Game Pass, right? So it seems like a logical step. And being able to play Xbox games on any device, just any device, sounds intriguing. Just to have people... Here's the thing. You know, consoles sell, but subscriptions get you more money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I don't think this would be something for me. I'd rather have the game downloaded on my system, whether it's a console or PC. I don't like having it interrupted or dropped. I sometimes have sketchy internet connections, and if it dropped and then the game stopped, and well, it just would be a little pain in the ass to
me.
But
here's the thing. There was a console that was released in South America only called the Zeebo, which was a streaming console. And the reason why it was able to sell there is because it was really, really inexpensive, and you could play games like Resident Evil 4. So What I see here is that there's going to be two SKUs. One is going to be a regular console, probably selling for $400, $500, something, probably $400. I don't think Microsoft wants to sell another console for $500. And the other one, dirt cheap, like $150, which will stream the games. Because what it allows it to do is it allows it to have less components in there and just focus on... controller latency and you know, as it said, and you can bet your bottom dollar that the streaming console would have, you know, a stronger with, you know, IO ports, that because if all the games are going to be streaming, you better make sure that thing, you know, doesn't have any breaks in service,
you know? Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And like I said, you know, if you don't want to pay too much money for a console, you know, if you want to pay for an inexpensive console, and if you pay something like $200 for a console and then get free game, any games you want for $10 a month, and there's no restriction, or at least just restricted to the game library, And also you got EA's Game Pass as well. You know, you have a pretty significant system that all you have to do is worry about your network. And I don't know about you, but I would make sure that would be the one thing that I would not have wireless. That would be wired connection only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think one of the most important things they need to deal with when they're dealing with this cloud streaming service is that one of the issues with PlayStation Now is that you didn't really get to save data on those games because they're on a stream and you don't keep the data on your PS4. Yeah. And so if the connection drops on a game like Sly Cooper, you're out of luck. You start back over at the beginning. You lost your game and you have to go back to the start.
Well, the Xbox already has cloud saving.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a big help towards this streaming thing. Like,
well,
Netflix
let me
and all,
go
like,
on. Let me tell you, one thing that was in the article, which I did not do because it's a long article, is that Microsoft has been buffing up all of its servers. It's getting more and more servers because it's ramping up for this thing. So they're really putting a lot of money into having a huge, huge cloud service. So I think they're addressing that by saying, you know, we're not going half measures. We're going to have a metric crap ton because maybe they see the future, and they see the future sees consoles vanishing and just having streaming services. I mean, look at Netflix.
And I guess if that's the case, I hope that Sony steps up its game and makes something similar.
Well,
the groundwork with PS Now.
What do you think
they
the
just
Switch
need
is?
To?
I'm sorry. What do you think the Switch is? The Switch is one step towards streaming. Look at the tiny little storage space you have on the Switch. You can tell that Nintendo's getting ready to do their own streaming.
Yeah. And they already have the foundation with PlayStation Now. They just need to fix it up and make it work better.
Yeah, they need to fix up the game library, the eShop searching for games, because you were right, it is hard to find something if you don't know what you're looking for, like a specific title. You just kind of want an RPG or something like that, and you're not sure if they have it. So I'm sitting there, you know, just typing in, well, do they have the other Zelda games yet? And, you know, so they really need to fix that. So far, I haven't had a hard drive issue, though.
What's funny is this essentially means that you could be playing Halo 5 on your PlayStation 4. Because when they say stream on any device, they're really agnostic. You can stream it on any device. They don't care about what console or what you own. You can share a PC. They just want you to subscribe to the service.
But wouldn't they have to do programming for the Halo if it went to PlayStation?
No. No, it's just gamepad controls. It's a streaming service. You're playing the game on their end, not your end.
Okay.
When you play a streamed game, you're not... You're just using your console as a window or your PC as a window.
I mean, it's the same as Netflix, as it said. But as long as it has as long as your system has like the connections and the hardware to do it, then I don't see an issue with it as long as they can fix that input lag issue and create a worthwhile saving system.
That's what they're saying.
Because I don't want to start over at the beginning every time I play a streamed game.
I agree. That sounds very annoying.
I actually played Mass Effect 2 early on in the streaming, and I was surprised at how smooth it was playing it on my PC, just completely streaming it. So, I mean, here's the thing. The major part of this is that they're giving people a choice. They can say, well, you can buy a traditional console, or you can buy this console, which is going to be probably half as expensive, but allows you to play games through it, you know, without having to worry about, and you can play, you know, without having to worry about, you know, losing, you know, it's a streaming service. In case you don't have the money to buy the full console.
Yeah.
At least there won't be any dirty disc errors. Here's the thing. You know, people are already, you know, most people are now buying their games in an online store, whether it's PlayStation Network or Xbox Live Marketplace or obviously Steam, rather than buying discs. I mean, who buys it? You know, almost no one buys discs for their PC anymore to play games. They could be seeing the writing on the wall. You know, most people are going to be buying their games digitally anyway. So, we can start doing this now. People have already gotten an idea to the use of not having physical media.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's going to be a console, so it's kind of a moot point. It's nice to see that they're going to have some sort of option, I guess lesser cost-effective option. But I'm also curious to see how it works, because I do like the idea of the cloud streaming thing. It's just it's interesting to think about if it works or how it will work.
Now, we have to remember that whatever the new console is, it's going to run all the stuff that the current console will do, because that's what Sony and Microsoft have been doing. You know, they're saying whatever next console is, guess what? It's going to be 100 backwards compatible, because it's just going to be the same hardware with better specs. So it could be that you could buy the new Xbox Cloud to play the newer games that your Xbox One X can't play. Although I don't see that happening anytime soon, but I'm just saying, you know, the benefit of having a cloud device is that you don't have to worry about system specs. It'll run.
Mm-hmm.
It's on someone else's thing. We'll see. I mean, it's not 2020 yet. I mean, it seems obvious there's going to be a new console in 2020, period. I mean, we're burying the lead there. This makes me wonder when Sony's next console is going to be. Is it going to be in 2020? Are they going to wait? Are they going to wait until... Are they going to try and get a jump and release one in 2019? Although if they did that, they would have undoubtedly announced it at this past E3. It'll be interesting to see what Sony does, because they've already somewhat gotten burned with the PlayStation 4 Pro. You know, people are saying, why would I buy that? I have the PlayStation 4. You know, it wasn't appreciably... I mean, the thing about the Xbox One X is that it's appreciably more powerful than the Xbox One. But the PlayStation PlayStation 4 Pro was just there saying, well, we're making it so that PSVR games won't suck. You know? So it'll be interesting to see when Sony comes out with their next console, whether it's the PlayStation 5 or some other iteration of the PlayStation 4.
Yeah. I don't know. I always think about the PS4 only because I have a 4K TV, and I know that, like, some of my colleagues have said that it does look... I don't have a Pro. I have a regular PS4. I have my original PS4 from when the first Destiny came out. my glacial white PS4.
I wish I had the white. You know, those... I wish I had the white Xbox One. That was really nice looking. Mm-hmm. But it was only released to people who actually worked on the Xbox One. I would not have traded that in.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. GOG. Classic console games, quote-unquote, might be possible. This comes to us from MCV UK. GOG, a DRM-free marketplace for PC games that sells a mix of modern and classic titles, has said that classic console games could be a possibility on the service, but it's a legal problem rather than a technical one. According to Markin Przinski, the head of product at GOG, I think it might be possible at some point. However, the problem is very, very complicated, he says, because of the way the rights for these classic titles are handled. GOG, previously known as Good Old Games, is something of a specialist when it comes to unpicking tricky rights. The service returned SWAT 4 to storefronts when it spent a significant amount of time lost in the rights wasteland. God, SWAT 4 was so good. I loved SWAT 4. I won't say it is impossible, and I certainly would love to have some of the console games on GOG. They're talking about PlayStation 1 games, by the way, because we would be able to make them work. And he said, adding, maybe we already tried.
That would be pretty sweet, but I don't know how.
Playing some PlayStation 1 games on your PC?
I mean, I would, especially like Suikoden, for instance. But I don't know, like, how iron grip Sony is on some of their titles, because they...
Well, not all of them are Sony games. Some of them are just, you know, third-party games that...
Okay. Like, yeah, Konami's would be Suikoden, so they would, I guess, try to have to get the rights from Konami and not Sony, you're right. But, like, I don't know about the other consoles. I mean, I guess Microsoft would be more willing to do that, since a lot of those games could be...
ported to PC a lot easier. But
a lot of people, you know, like, let me give you an example of a PlayStation 1 game, 3D Lemmings. You know?
We already have Lemmings on PC.
No, but I'm talking about the PS1 version. I mean, I'm just saying, games that aren't, that people have fonder memories of, that were not the top-notch games, not like Final Fantasy VII, which, of course, Square Enix is not going to let the copyright for that drop, you know.
Well, the Final Fantasy VII is on Steam.
So. I get that, but we're talking about purchasing PlayStation 1 versions of games. We're not, you know, there's some people may want to play actual golf.
Yeah.
I mean, there are PlayStation 1 games, and you know they don't have to be exclusively to being, you know, only on that console.
Right.
Right. And I mean, it's always going to be an issue of rights in that case. Like, I'm sure that that some people are going to be a little bit more willing to to allow GOG to work with their, you know, their their abandonware titles at this point.
Right.
Go ahead.
Some of their abandonware titles have gone to PC. The Trials in the Sky game, those were
on.
That's
not abandonware. That's someone buying the rights and using them. I mean, it doesn't have to be PlayStation 1 games. I mean, they were talking about PlayStation 1 games, but, you know, there are a lot of, say, NES games that have gone through the cracks.
But, I mean, it was a console game, and it was brought to GOG and Steam. That's my point.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, if Capcom hasn't gotten, like, okay, for instance, Strider 2 is hard to find. If Capcom isn't going to make a re-release of Strider 2 anytime soon, I would like to see GOG make a working copy of Strider 2 that I could then play on GOG.com.
Mm-hmm. Like, I want Dr. Brain to be put on GOG. That would be really awesome. But, yeah, it's all about the rights.
Hmm. Like I said, you know, going back to the C64, you know, there are games that were only on the C64 or Apple II that I really love playing, like Autoduel, you know? And if it appears on GOG Classic, you know, they're not console games. But, you know, there are just some games that have been on consoles that just slip through the cracks and, you know, no one cares about except for those few people who actually played them and enjoyed them. I mean, I know that Jordan is going to talk about his Fireman game from the Sega Saturn that no one cares about. What was it? Rangers? Fire Rangers? Something like that. We'll have to ask Jordan about that. But let me ask you a question. Are there any games that you played on an early console, like the NES or the Super NES or the PlayStation 1, et cetera, that really wasn't a big game but you have special memories of?
For me, that's Legend of Mana. Not Secret of Mana or Secret of Mana 2, but the PS1 version of the game. Just because there were so many cool-ass characters in that game, and it was like an interesting sort of storybook world where, and it had some of the most beautiful music in it. I love that game.
How about you, Scott?
Definitely. Well, like I said, I think Suikoden would be nice to have on the PC, because I don't think
here's the thing. It wouldn't exactly be a PC game. It would just be an emulated console game.
Right. Yeah. Emulated console game. Suikoden, trying to think of something else that's not, cause I mean, like, I would love Breath of Fire to be on there. I know that wasn't the most popular series. Trying to think of something. I think I'd like to see Alundra come to PC, be emulated on there.
I'd like to see the NES Ultima games, because I've heard about them and I've seen about them, but I never got to play them. You know, because I played Ultima 3 and Ultima 4 and et cetera, but I never got to play the NES versions of those games.
I played the NES version, I think, of Ultima 4, and I thought it was
something of the Avatar.
Very easy.
Was it Quest of the Avatar?
I think it was Quest of the Avatar. Right. And I found it to be a very easy game, and from what I've heard, that these games are supposed to be difficult, and this one
really wasn't. Well, they were difficult for the time.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I saw Spoonie do a Let's Play, a little bit of a Let's Play, and they're still insane even now, those older ones. They like you, well, maybe, the first game you can actually badass. Find a spaceship.
Maybe you're just badass, and you say, oh, yeah, this is a piece of cake.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are people like that who are just really good at a game. It's like, oh, it's too easy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I would like to try those because I saw advertisements for them in comics, and I said, wait, that looks like Ultima 3. Oh, it is Ultima 3, except they're calling it Ultima something. They didn't add the numbers. Like, Ultima 4 was Ultima Quest of the Avatar, you know? And it had those JRPG, you know, graphics.
Yeah, Nintendo had a bad habit of doing that. They did it with Dragon Quest.
I mean, here's the thing. When I played Ultima 3 and Ultima 4, they were just stick figures. So I enjoyed the I never played the PlayStation 2 version of Deus Ex.
Mm.
Oh, I never... You know what I never played? I never played Decay, Half-Life Decay. Which was only on the PlayStation 2. Which is a side story with those two women. You know, the ones who send the sample up to Gordon. So, yeah. Try that out.
Yeah. Are there any other game? Like, so you say Ultima and Half-Life Decay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I couldn't get, like, that really kind of has been abandoned that I couldn't get anymore that I would want to see back in the, like, in a place where I could play it.
Well, if you ever played Auto Duel, you'd want to play it all the time.
Oh, you know what? The Bushido Blade games. Those games were ridiculously good.
Those were fun.
And, like, they're not coming back. No, I don't think there's any... I don't know who holds the rights to those games anymore, but, like, those games were definitely of a very unique take on fighting games that just, like, kind of fell by the wayside.
You know what? Like, maybe we should contact GOG and say, hey, guess what? These rights for the Bushido Blade games, no one knows where they are. Maybe you can snap them up once they become available like you did with SWAT 4.
Yeah. It was a ridiculously good game too. Like, you had different characters, but you could pick any different weapon for any character. And like, every battle was like, it wasn't like there was no life bar. You strike a person once and they're dead. and like, what's more is if you got, like, there were glancing wounds and there were mortal wounds, and if you got, like, struck and hit, like, with a glancing wound, your character would, like, have an injury in the next as you went through the game's arcade mode. So, like, they would have an eye patch from taking a head hit, or, like,
Jesus.
They would be missing missing a hand from taking a chop to the wrist or something.
Ouch.
And, like, these characters get, like, progressively more messed up as you go on. You're like, God, I need to protect my character better because I feel bad for him.
Now you're making everybody think about the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy
It's
Plural.
Not. It's actually not far different from that, but a little less ridiculous. Yeah.
Anyways, that'll be the question of the week. What little known console games did you play that you really love? You know, that have fallen beyond the wayside, that are, you know, that people have forgotten, but you still remember fondly. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, have fun, play games, y'all.